Hello. In this audio snippet, we'd like to continue talking about music and what we were sharing previously about Taylor Swift and what we're calling the day the music went nowhere, the day that American music died. So we want to get to that, but before getting to that, we'd like to share some thoughts related to recent headlines, and we want to go through these quickly as possible because we really want to continue talking about music because there is a very important message underneath that. It's not just talking about music in general. It's talking about an underlying message that is there that we hope is getting or will get imparted as we talk about music. So the first headline we wanted to mention quickly is one on the gatewaypundit.com. And it was posted on Armistice Day, the 11th of November, 2023. And the title of it says, "Democrats Sank Uyghur." I'm not sure how to pronounce the fellow's name. Loses it on Piers Morgan show upon hearing some uncomfortable facts from Rabbi Shmuley. Not sure how to pronounce his name either. And he called him, "You bigot, you racist." So I wanted to read some of the things that happened during that exchange, that interview on that show by Piers Morgan. These two guys went at each other. So I wanted to share some of the things that they said and also share a related thought that also has to do with a resolution, an anti-Semitism resolution that the Congress passed recently that we talked about in a previous audio snippet. So let me just read some of the things that were said in that exchange. The rabbi, obviously Jewish, said, quote, "The Palestinians were offered a state in 1936 and the Peel Commission rejected it. They were offered a state in 1947. The UN partition plan, they rejected it. They were offered a state in 1967 after Israel conquered Judea and Samaria and the West Bank. They rejected it. They were offered a state in 2000. Yasser Arafat, Ehud Barak, they rejected it. They were offered a state with Ehud Olmert, in 2008, they rejected it. Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza in 2005, and they did not create a state," said Rabbi Shmuley. Rabbi Shmuley then challenged Uyghur's stance on the conflict, stating, questioning his silence on various historical events. So the rabbi goes on to say, "Where were you, Sink? When you said that you care about Palestinian children, when Hamas stole the highest rate per capita of international foreign aid, larger than the Marshall Plan, from Palestinian children, did not build schools for them, did not build hospitals, took all the money to buy bombs and to build a network of tunnels, which is larger than the New York subway system, where were you then? Why did you only come up now? In fact, when Bashar al-Assad killed 600,000 children, Arab children, when he gassed them with mustard gas. My organization took out full-page New York Times ads to protect them. Where were you then? You don't care about Arab children. You're a Jew hater, defined as someone who only wants to lie and say that the Jews are genocide," unquote, said Rabbi Shmuley. And then Uyghur lashed out at Rabbi Shmuley and resorted to name-calling and agitation, which usually signifies a loss in their argument, calling him, quote, a racist and a, quote, bigot. Rabbi Shmuley defended his right to express his view on the show, accusing Uyghur of trying to silence him due to his ignorance of the facts and history. So that's kind of the gist of the exchange. So I just wanted to mention the things that this rabbi mentioned about how the Palestinians have been pandered to over and over again, and they've been offered the opportunity to have a state, the state they always claim that they deserve, but every time they have had a chance, they have rejected it. Because it's the same thing, in a nutshell, what happens here in America with the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party bitches and moans about let's take just one minority group, how black people are oppressed and how the white man has used his white privilege to oppress them and this and that and the other. But every time they are put in power and have an opportunity to do something for black people, to really enable black people and help them to become successful, they don't do a thing. The public school system always goes to hell when they are in power. You would think that if a city has been run by Democrats for 40, 50 years, that their public school system would be spectacularly well designed, and that children, especially the black children who are going through that system, would be learning and becoming successful and having opportunities. But no, every time they have the opportunity to supposedly help those who they always complain about being victims, they don't do a thing. Same thing with the Palestinians, because it's the victim thing is just a mechanism to maintain power. That's why Yasser Arafat, who's burning in hell as we speak, never wanted a Palestinian state, really, even though he talked about it and supposedly fought for it, because it was always this like carrot that kept being dangled in front of the world, and the world would try to go catch it, and it would always be moved. It was a way to always get money and funding and support from the world. And if the crisis that they claim to exist ended, or if they had no reason to claim that there was a crisis anymore, then the money would run out because they didn't want to produce on their own. They just wanted to take advantage of people. So that's one thing, but the larger issue that we wanted to briefly talk about is this thing about the racism thing. The Democrat went on and said, "Oh, you're a racist, you're a bigot." Why did he call him a racist and a bigot? Because he said things against the Palestinian people, and he brought out the facts and said this, 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 and this, and this, and that caused him to think, "Oh, he's a racist." But the thing is, that same game is beginning to be played by conservatives on the other side. That's why that resolution that was passed in Congress, this meaningless, stupid resolution that was passed that condemned the protests against Israel and universities and so forth, this toothless and meaningless resolution, that resolution was fundamentally flawed. Because see, if you start saying, "Oh, we are against anti-Semitism and we will not, we reject all manifestations of anti-Semitism and so forth," what you're doing is you're playing into the Democrats' game, into the liberals' game of labeling people as racist when they say something negative about people of a certain race. See, that's not racism. The thing is, the problem is not with people protesting on the streets against Israel and saying free Palestine and Gaza is occupied and whatever and so forth. That's not the problem. The problem is what they're saying true or not? is what they're saying about the Israelis true or not? That's what matters. So just because they're saying something negative about the about Israelis does not make them anti-Semites. It's whether they're saying something false or true about Israelis that's what needs to be judged. And that's the problem. But the thing is, it makes it easier to defend politically when you say, oh, this anti-Semitism, we're against intolerance and so forth. But the problem is you're then playing their game and you're just reinforcing the values that they keep trying to impose on everybody else. That mindset is, you do not criticize. Oh, there's always one exception: the white race. You can criticize them till kingdom come, but you don't criticize any other race, because if you say something negative about a certain race, then you are automatically a racist. Now the problem with that is that it detaches you from reality. Because what we've said a million times, it doesn't mean that if you say something about a race, it doesn't mean that everybody of that race fits what you're saying. But you're talking about general patterns of behavior. These general patterns of behavior, and because they are based on values that are cultivated. In a family, races are, or ethnicities or whatever, are at the end of the day like families. There are good families and bad families. Why are there good families and bad families? Because some families cultivate some good values and some other families cultivate bad values. And you can be born into a family, but that does not automatically mean that you will absorb all the values in that family, because some people are born into a family, they reject the values of their family. And they decide to go their own way. But that does not take away from the reality that the family has these values that are bad, and that's why there's a tendency for people from that family to be bad people. You know, like the mafia families. Yeah. Why? Because they cultivate mafia values, and they pass them down generations, and that's why the mafia keeps going, because these values are being cultivated in that family. And if you say something negative about the family, you're just talking about the reality of the patterns of behavior that you're seeing in the family. Doesn't mean that every member of the family follows that pattern. There could be outliers, people who reject the mafia values, even though they're born into a mafia family. But that does not take away from the reality that there are patterns of behavior, and you have to deal with them, because it's like it's a culture. You know, like a lab culture. I'm not talking about culture. I'm talking about a biological culture. This petri dish that is producing all these germs constantly, and you have to clean that out in order to end that constant manifestation of the same issues over and over again. And you have to say it, and you have to talk about general patterns, and that's what makes. That's how you change things, how you produce lasting results and lasting change that is good. And the problem is liberals have used this idea that if you say anything negative about a race, then you are a racist and therefore you're evil and you're intolerant and so forth. No, we're just talking about a reality. But the weird thing is that they never apply that principle when it comes to white people. When it comes to white people, you can say, "Oh, they are imperialists. They destroy everything that they touch, and this and so forth." And it's just the very opposite of reality. Generally, where white people have established themselves, things prosper and grow. And there's a reason for that, because white people have generally cultivated a certain set of values that other races just do not cultivate or do not care to cultivate, especially the white Germanic and Nordic and to a certain extent Celtic races or groups, those are the ones that have cultivated a certain set of values that are different, and that makes them special, and that's why they have prospered. But so we wanted to mention that. So it is frustrating that this resolution that was passed by Congress is just reinforcing the same parameters of this same value judgment, where you can't say anything about a race because that makes you a racist, even if you're stating facts, just like this rabbi was stating fact after fact, and then the other guy said, oh, you're criticizing a race, the behavior of people in a certain race, and therefore you are a racist. And so we keep playing that game, and it never seems to end. We wanted to say some other talk about some other headlines, but I have this feeling that we should just keep moving and maybe mention them some other time. I'll just go to skip a few headlines that we were going to mention here. I'm not going to skip this one. We do have to talk about this one. So let me just quickly go to this one. If I can find it. Yes. It was posted on the Daily Mail, and it was posted on the 13th of November, 2023. And the headline read, "Are you sure Megan soccer star Rapinoe claims injury in first 3 minutes of her final game proves there is no God and claims it is..." I can't say what she said. I'm going to read part of the story. Women's soccer star or football star Megan Rapinoe has decided that there is no God after the U.S. player sustained a devastating injury in her last ever game and had to exit the field just 3 minutes in. She says she was pretty sure she tore her Achilles tendon in the final match of her long career. And then she said, "I'm not a religious person or anything, and if there was a God, this is proof that there isn't. This is bleep, bleep." Rapinoe said in her post-game interview as her teammate, Rose Lavelle, 28, laughed along with her. So they found that funny. So then it says Rapinoe's OL Reign squad fell 2-1 to Gotham FC on Saturday night, losing the title after she was taken off after an injury just before the third minute. So I'm not sure exactly where this game was played. I don't know if it was played here in the New York area, which would be amazing if it happened here. And I mean that because I'm here. So I've always despised this woman. This woman is arrogant, self-righteous, and she epitomizes a lot of what's wrong with this country, and part of the reason why it's dead. But I find the irony in what she says. She doesn't realize realize the contradiction of what she's saying. She hates God. In her life, she has shown that she hates the idea of God or a Christian God or any type of God, I would dare say. And she has hated this idea of God her whole life. And then she says, well, if there was a God, then he would have made sure that I would have finished ended my career in a glorious way. Well, isn't that contradictory? Because if there is a God, wouldn't his reaction be, okay, I'm going to show her who's the boss and kind of ruin her, her finale 3 minutes into it with a devastating injury? Isn't that ironically proof that there is a God? But see, in her mind, that's what the liberal mindset does. It just distorts logic to the point that they say things that are completely stupid. If she was a devout Christian and then she had this devastating thing, then and the statement would kind of make sense, you know, because, oh, she's supposedly following God, and then she ends her career like that, then there might be no God or something. Or she was commenting about a devout Christian losing her or ending her career like that. But she doesn't realize that she inadvertently mentioned God because it's as if she knew deep in her being that if there was a God, this is proof, what happened to me is proof that there is a God who made sure he's the one responsible for me being injured. But her reaction, instead of saying, okay, maybe there is a God, her reaction was to hate God even more and say, how dare you judge me for what I have done against you my whole life. And that's why I don't believe in you, because see, these people don't believe in a God who is a God of justice and judgment. So that's why they reject him. He's like too mean, too masculine, too male, for them. And when they perceive anything like that, they just reject it. So yes, in her world, it's proved that they're, that she should hate God even more. If there is a God and God did justice against her because of how she has fought him her whole life, then that is proof that's a God I don't want to follow, and I would rather live in a contradiction in my head than follow that God. That's what basically she is saying. And it's ironic. So, and you can say, well, this is liberals behaving like this, but conservatives are the same thing too, because they wanted an America to be restored based on conservative values, the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, and all the rubbish that we've talked about before. And they said, if we don't have it restored that way, we don't want any restoration. Basically, that's what they said. And the truth said, okay, you shall have no restoration, and you're dead. It's the same thing. I don't know how to explain it, but it's the same pattern of thinking. When you commit to a falsehood, and you would rather reject evidence. Even when it's like you embrace a falsehood that will supposedly take you to a promised land, and you would rather not go to the promised land than accept that what you have embraced will not take you to the promised land. I don't know how to explain this. It's exactly the same thing. So we wanted to mention that very, very quickly. Just by the way, I just saw this, didn't even see it until now, in that story on the Daily Mail, there's a paragraph that says, the athlete hit back at critics during the 2019 Women's World Cup, describing herself as, quote, particularly and uniquely and very deeply American, unquote. And that's why her career ended like that, because she is a reflection of America, in a sense. And America is dead, and so is her career. And she ended in a disaster, just like America will end, not with a bang, but with a whimper, dying in sad shame instead of ending gloriously. So... okay, so so the other headline that we wanted to talk about before we start talking about music in particular is this story posted on noqreport.com that always redirects you to americafirstreport.com. The headline reads, Why is Volcanic Activity Starting to Go Crazy All Over the World? And it's by a fellow named Michael Snyder. It was posted on November 13th, 2023, and this fellow kind of has some of his stories posted on this website every now and then, and they're usually very. He's a Christian, and he's always talking about the apocalypse, and he has a book about the end of the world and all that. And every time I see a headline from him, it's always almost like kind of an alarmist headline about the world ending and inflation coming and ravaging us and destroying us. And so there's always a bit of hyperbole with him. But I think it's hyperbole that he believes. It's like he has a certain viewpoint of things. And almost like the world is going to collapse, and we just have to get right with God and be sure to be ready for the rapture and all this stuff that, you know, traditional evangelical conservative Christians are always talking about. So that's where he goes. So I usually avoid reading his stories, but this one, for some reason, drew my attention. I felt the need to read through it, and I think there is something to it. But not exactly what he might think is in the story. There is something there, maybe not what he thinks, but it's worth mentioning. So I'm going to read part of the article. It says, all of a sudden, the giant rock that we all live on is starting to go a bit nuts. Unusual volcanic activities happening all over the globe, but the quote experts are assuring us that there's nothing to be concerned about. But could it be possible that they are wrong? After you have reviewed the information that I provide in this article, come to your own conclusion. To me, it definitely appears to that what we are currently witnessing is not normal. But see, so again, he is just having this apocalyptic view of the world based on his understanding of the Book of Revelation. And so he has this this view of things. He doesn't realize that if he were listening to the truth, he would understand that these things are saying something completely different that he doesn't understand. But let's read the things that he's noticing. He says here, right now, volcanic activity is causing a brand new island to emerge from the Pacific Ocean just off the coast of Japan's Iwo Jima Island. And there's a quote here from a story. It says, the submerged volcano began erupting on October 21st, with activity ramping up over the next 10 days. By October 30th, explosions were taking place every few minutes, according to a translated statement. The eruption threw large lumps of rock into the air and shot a jet of gas and ash over 160 feet, 50 meters, almost vertically above the water surface. So he quoted like something from another story. So he goes on to say, needless to say, a new island is not born very often. And then he keeps going. But when it comes to Japan, there's another volcano that I believe is far more of a threat. Let's keep a very close eye on Mount Fuji in 2024 and beyond, because when it finally blows, it's going to cause death and destruction on an absolutely massive scale. Then it says, meanwhile, in Iceland, residents of the town of Grindavik are being evacuated because thousands of earthquakes have raised concerns that a volcanic eruption may be imminent. And then he quotes a story that says, some residents of the southwestern island of island town of Grindavik were allowed to briefly return home Sunday to quickly gather essential belongings and pets left behind when evacuations were ordered amid thousands of earthquakes that have rattled the region and raised concerns that a volcanic eruption may be imminent. And they began apparently mass evacuation of Grindavik on Friday. So he says, overall, that region has been hit by more than 4,000 earthquakes in recent days, and at least 1,000 of those quakes were actually, quote, recorded within the magma tunnel. Not sure what the magma tunnel is, but and then he says, here in the United States, Mount St. Helens has been rattled by 400 earthquakes since the middle of July. 400 earthquakes have been recorded under Mount St. Helens since mid-July, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. This is the longest series of tremors since the volcano's last eruption ended in 2008. And then it says, we're being told that, quote, magma has been flowing through chambers deep underground as the volcano recharges. And then he quotes a story that says, there are fears the earthquakes could lead to another massive explosion reminiscent of 1980's eruption that left 57 people dead and permanently altered the area's ecosystem. And then he talks about, he says, but as my regular readers already know, I'm even more concerned about Mount Rainier. On the other side of the world, seismic activity has been regularly shaking an absolutely massive supervolcano known as Campi Flegre, somewhere in Italy. I'm going to read, he quotes a story that says, it's now the site of multiple volcanoes that have been active for 39,000 years, many of which lie underwater. It's also populated with villas, small villages, and shopping malls, and home to 800,000 people and a hospital under construction. More than 500,000 of the locals live in what Italy's Civil Protection Agency has deemed a, quote, red zone, an area encompassing 18 towns that is at highest risk in the event of an eruption. An additional 3 million residents of Naples live immediately outside the eastern edge of the caldera, according to the Civil Protection Agency. The last major eruption of Campi Flegre was in 1538, and it created a new mountain in the bay. Seismic activity in the area has been intensifying since December of 2022, according to Italy's National Institute of Geophysics and Volcanology, and experts fear that the volcano could be reawakening after generations at rest. And then this guy, Michael Snyder, says, so far this year, Campi Flegre has been hit by more than 3,400 earthquakes, and this has generated quite a bit of alarm. So, and then it says, all of this seismic activity has been happening at a time when the giant ball of fire that our planet revolves around has been extremely active. So there's been a lot of coronal mass ejection from the sun. So he talks about that. And then he says, scientific experts are going to just keep telling you that nothing unusual is happening at all. And people like me are going to just keep telling you that cataclysmic times are now upon us. So that's what he takes from this. Like, okay, is my, what I say in my book going to happen? That's kind of where he's going. But he doesn't understand, he doesn't read the signals, because he all sees it, he sees it as part of this kind of a very traditional script, Christian script of how the world will end and so forth. He doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't understand that this is all a manifestation of several things, including the death of America. You know, that was a very strong event. The fact that this, the activity with, in Italy that he was talking about started intensifying around December of 2022 is significant because that's when the World Cup in Qatar ended. And as we've said before, that the day of that final is when I realized, oh, I think America is going to die. That was the first time that I had to accept in my whole life that America, okay, I think America is gone. And I know that it's not a coincidence that this activity was started happening around December of 2022. Aside from that, I do believe that the other reason, and I know this is going to sound silly, but you know, we've been talking about Fire Lake, you know, this song. And there's a significance to it, Fire Lake, and we've talked about it. And now we're seeing all this fire, volcanic activity coming from the heart of the earth. And I know it's not a coincidence. And so that's what that's what it's trying to say. These things are trying to point that out. The death of America, the fact that the American music is going nowhere. That whole theme of a deadness, and then the Earth's reaction to that death, to that state of stagnation, and the fact that the Earth is groaning for the manifestation of a vision that has not been fulfilled. That's what's going on. And it's like groaning in sorrow because America, which was the place through which that vision was going to be fulfilled, has died because it chose not to pursue the vision, because it didn't embrace the fire of the vision to see that vision manifested. And that's why the Earth says, well, if you're not going to burn with the fire, I'm going to burn for you because I need this manifestation to happen. The Earth groans for the manifestation of that vision, and it requires people who have that fire inside of them, and America just didn't have it. So that's what's going on, and that's why these things are happening. So now that we've mentioned the stories, and we skipped quite a few because I think it just felt like no, it's not the time to. There's more relevant things to talk about at this moment right now, or things relevant at this moment, shall we say. So now that we've talked about those things, we wanted to mention one thought that came to my heart and mind maybe a couple of days ago, 1 or 2 days ago. I was thinking, about Taylor Swift and her music and how it's all very soap opera. Opera-ish, and I don't know why it stuck in my mind that I felt the need to use the word telenovela when talking about her song in the previous audio snippet, if I remember correctly. And I kept thinking, why did I say that? And then I started thinking about telenovelas, that those are Hispanic soap operas. They are very, at least from what I have observed, at least up until some years ago, I'm not sure how it is now, because I'm a little disconnected from them. I try to stay as disconnected from them as possible. But I remember that Hispanics used to love their telenovelas. It's like a big thing. And I think it's in part because they didn't have the creativity to produce more substantive television programming. So the telenovela format was kind of the easiest way to go for a lot of them. And so a lot of Hispanic television is telenovelas. That's what they do the most. I'm not sure if that's the case anymore. I don't know, and I couldn't care less. But the thing is that they might still love their telenovelas. And I can tell you from my experience that they all seem to follow the same format. It's always the story of a young lady, a beautiful lady who is poor and is trapped in an environment where people take advantage of her because she's poor and vulnerable. And so she suffers through a whole bunch of tragedies and betrayals and so forth. And then eventually she finds a gorgeous guy who has money and has power, and he comes to rescue her against all odds, and they live happily ever after. That's basically the theme, and all the telenovelas seem to go that way. They just change the names and a few things here and there, but it's always the same story. It's always the same plot, and there's always some evil. There's always an evil lady, another young lady who's also beautiful but evil. one or more who envy her beauty and who try to destroy her and who try to take the gorgeous guy away from her and so forth. It's always the same thing. And I started, as I was thinking about all these things, I said, oh my goodness, I had never seen this. And it's like I was aware of it, but never aware of it this whole time. And I said, my goodness, doesn't that sound like Cinderella? It's the story of Cinderella. So I realized, oh my goodness, that's exactly it. The telenovela format is a story. It's a cheapened version of Cinderella every single time, and this is going to make sense. This started to make sense when I realized. What happened recently when Taylor Swift went down to Argentina and she had one concert. The second concert was canceled because there was thunder and lightning. And I've shared a little bit on to me, there's a significance in how that it was like the truth being angry at that concert. And I mentioned a little bit about, didn't go into many details about a vision I had when I was like 14 or 15 years old. And when I saw her, that she had been in this concert in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, at River Plate Stadium, it was disheartening to me because it was like the vision was fulfilled, but not the way I had thought it would be. But when I saw it, that's what the vision was about. And I understood that why there was a certain part of that vision, if you can call it that, that I didn't understand. Now I understood it. So it was a sad fulfillment. So it's like the truth showed anger at the second concert, and especially because her savior, her gorgeous savior, quote, gorgeous, and I say that in quotes, arrived in Argentina, and it was as if the truth was saying, there's nothing male about this. This is all female. This is all matriarchal. There's nothing masculine about this, this whole thing. So that second concert was canceled, and apparently there was a third concert, a final concert, and then she left Argentina. But in that third final concert, her boyfriend, the American football player, showed up in the concert, and I think he went, you know, kind of behind the stage towards the end of the concert or at the beginning, I'm not sure, I couldn't care less, to be frank. But the thing is, you see the video of him showing up behind the stage, and then she sees him. And she runs, and I'm not saying this in a mocking way, so please don't get me wrong. I really don't mean it in a mocking way. She ran like a little girl, like a little teenager, excited towards him and kissed him, and everybody cheered in the stadium and all that. And some people would criticize her, oh, that she's like acting like a teenager and all that, but that's not the issue. And there was a certain... kind of, I don't know how to explain, cuteness about it, tenderness about it. So that was not an issue with me, that she ran like a little teenage girl towards the guy and kissed him. That was not, that didn't bother me. But when I saw that, I said, oh my goodness, this is the Cinderella story. You know, this is Taylor Swift, who started off, you know, from simple beginnings in Nashville, you know, in Tennessee and all that, and then began to rise. And then as she rose to fame, envy, all the people who envied her and criticized her came against her. So she's had this conflict of the people who envy her for the wrong reasons. And then she's been struggling through life, trying to find the love of her life. And then this guy shows up and her dreams are coming true. And I said, oh, that's Cinderella. And that's why she's running like a little girl to her, you know, to to her man because it's like Cinderella finding her prince, Prince Charming or whatever. I get confused with Snow White. I'm not sure where Prince Charming showed up, but the thing is that that's her life. So she's her whole life has been one big telenovela, and it's manifested in her music. It's all about relationships and these personal struggles to find happiness, but it's always a very superficial happiness at a very superficial emotional level, and that's why her music goes nowhere. So we wanted to mention that, and then another thing we wanted to mention related to her. But well, this one is not related to her directly, but it will be when we. I hope when you see it. So let me see if I can find this this story here. I'm having a bit of a problem pulling it up, but okay. So. This story was posted on the Daily Mail, and I'm having trouble loading it up for some reason. Interesting. But as it's loading up, okay, here it is. This was posted on 31st of October, so it was more or less a couple of weeks ago, and it was posted by Nova Bajamonti, and the headline says, "Child-free Dink, D-I-N-K, couple proudly show off the many perks of life without kids, revealing they jet off on spontaneous vacations once a month as they hit back at critics who question why they haven't settled down." The Hillary Bowles, 31, and husband Logan, 30, have been married for 6 years. The North Carolina-based couple have traveled to 20 countries already. They call themselves DINKs, D-I-N-Ks, which stands for Dual Income, No Kids. And to me, this story, and it's interesting, it's from North Carolina because that was the last, as we've shared before, the last colony or last state that died on the 18th of September, signaling the end of America. The full end, the full death of America. And as I've said before, to me, there are three dates, main dates of death, the 6th, the 8th of September, and the 18th of September. To me, probably the most important was the 8th of September, because that's when America went brain dead, or maybe a better way of saying is it's when America's heart died. That was when New York State died. To me, that's the most relevant date, but the full date, that's personally, that was the most relevant date, I would dare say. But the full death happened until the 18th of September, when North Carolina died. So this is a North Carolina-based couple, and it's a reflection of where America is. An America that never was willing to live for a vision, and to make a sacrifice to see the fulfillment of a vision. They never embrace the fire, because for them it's all about what, you know, what life can provide for them. And so that's why they don't want to start a family. They just want to enjoy the perks of life without kids. And when you have no kids, I mean, biologically speaking, it's a figure of having no future. That doesn't mean that if you have no kids, you have no future. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about in the context of what this represents. It's people who are not thinking about a future. They're not going to invest their lives into the lives of somebody else. And you can do that, you know, even if you don't have literal kids, you can invest your life into other, for the sake of other people. But they don't have that. And that's the consequence of the matriarchal system at its peak. It is a system where you are where all your emotions revolve around you, and they never flow externally towards something or for the sake of someone else. And this caught my attention because later, or around the same time, there was this story, and I think it was the same day, posted the same day. And again, I'm having, for some reason, trouble going to the store. Here we go. It says, posted on the 1st of November. The other one was posted on the 31st of October, which happens to be what people call Halloween. And on the 1st of November, this story was posted. So it says, exclusive, on the Daily Mail again, exclusive: Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift keep kids away from his Kansas City home on Halloween with crime scene tape as security tells them no one's home today. Crime scene tape was put up around Travis Kelce's home on Halloween so trick-or-treaters wouldn't disturb him and Taylor Swift. Liars, one mother told DailyMail.com, while another child asked, why is it blocked off over there, Mom? Taylor jetted to Kansas City on her private jet Monday morning, comforting the tight end after his team's loss to the Broncos in Denver. So this was, and now I'm not a fan of Halloween. I find the whole thing gross because it's a celebration of darkness, celebration of horror and terror. And, you know, some of the costumes are funny, you know, the ones that are not leaning towards darkness. And I don't know why this year Halloween seemed to be more celebrated than other years, which is kind of sad and I think symbolic of, you know, the fact that America is dead, because that's a day of celebrating death. That's what Halloween is. I think it's associated with remembering dead people. That's where it started, if I remember correctly. All Saints Day, like the day before All Saints Day, and so forth. But the thing is that I'm not a fan of it. It's also the trick-or-treating thing. You know, it's almost like you do something for me or I will punish you for it. You know, a quid pro quo, you know, that sort of attitude. So there's something very nasty about it. That I've always found repulsive. So I don't have a problem with them, you know, not giving out candy. That's not the issue. But I know that they don't have the objections that I have towards Halloween. It's not that they on principle refuse to do it. No, they weren't doing it on principle that they were opposed to Halloween, because they would never do that, because that would be like going against the social traditions and social values, and people who live in this matriarchal mindset are always concerned about not doing something that's unpopular, that will make them look like outsiders, or people who don't follow the trends of society. So they would never do that. But the reason why they cordon off their house, even with crime scene tape, it's just the same thing as with the Dink couple from North Carolina. It's the same principle. It is people who live for themselves and don't want to invest themselves in the future. That's why they don't want to invest themselves in the kids, even spend time, you know, with them. And again, it's not that I'm condoning the whole Halloween nonsense, but what I'm saying is this is a reflection of what they are on the inside, that it's all so focused on self, living in that little world, in that labyrinth that we've been talking about. You get into that world and it's all that matters and nothing else matters. It's a very very black hole-ish kind of mindset. And that shows the difference between the two types of emotions that we've talked about. You know, the out of the five personalities, the two that are most directly related to emotions are the visionary and the server. The server is very emotional. The server can be very empathetic. The server feels your pain. The server tries to soothe you. The server's like a nurse trying to heal, to nurse you back to health. It's like a mother that takes care of you. It's very motherly. The server's personality can be very motherly. And there's it's all geared towards emotions and relationships. And the visionary has emotions too, but they're always channeled towards a cause. So the server's emotions stay inside. They never flow out. It's always inside the house. And the visionary goes out of the house and sees a vision and pursues it. And I think that's a reflection of them. That's why they enclose themselves in their little island, and were not willing, even if they knew that that would make them look unpopular, but they were willing to do that as long as they preserved their little island. But not going to the extreme of rejecting Halloween on principle or anything like that. And also saying we're not home, you know, they are home, you know, they're just trying to have their cake and eat it too. But it's a reflection of that lack of concern about the future. And that's why America died, because there weren't enough people who had the fire to make the sacrifice for the future. And they were not willing to let go of things and fight for the future. Conservatives are not visionaries. They're the opposite. That's why they are conservatives. They are reactionaries. They want to preserve the past. They don't want to forge a future vision. And they wanted to stay in their little America and their little conservative traditional America, and they fought so hard to stay inside that little world that it collapsed on them, because it was not sustainable, and that's why America is now dead. And they're still refusing to admit it, even though they know deep inside that it is dead. So having said all of that, I wanted to share something that I ran into by coincidence on the website, and I say coincidence in quotes, on the website where we post these audio recordings. There's a link that's called Random Posting, because there are a lot of postings on that website that have been added over time, over a period of 20, almost going on over 19 years. So there's a link called Random Posting that takes you randomly to some posting or some location inside some random posting. So I felt the need I went to the website and clicked on the random posting, link. And it took me to this, place, and I knew it was not a coincidence. It's a posting that is, titled Denmark Part 2. It was posted on November 29th, 2009. So this is, 14 years ago, more or less. And if you feel led, I would recommend if you care to read it, because I believe it's very relevant to what's going on nowadays. But the random link posting link sent me to a specific section in that posting, and the section is entitled "Introspective Leaping Green." So I wanted to read a couple of paragraphs from that section. So it says, as indicated on Wikipedia.org, Kierkegaard stressed the paradoxical importance of introspection and self-reflection in forging a true relationship between the individual and the world. In other words, you cannot be truly connected to the outside world unless you're first willing to look within yourself and find a truth that you're willing to commit to and live your life for. Therefore, we can reach the ironic conclusion that those who live self-involved lives are the people who are the least self-reflective. They live in a dulled state, driven by the pursuit of self-centered interests without ever engaging with the self they supposedly are so interested in. Only those who look within themselves are truly able to project themselves into the world and live a truly relevant life. And as you can see, this is, I mean, without meaning to, this was written 14 years ago. This is talking about the Dink couple, people who live self-involved lives, and they are the people who are the least self-reflective. So it's ironic because they are all about themselves, but they're so all about themselves that they are never really reflecting on themselves. They're not self-reflective. And it's the same thing with Taylor Swift's music. It's all about her. You get trapped in her world. But the level of self-reflection is so shallow that it never really causes you to get out. That's why you can't get out of that labyrinth, because the key to get out of that labyrinth is to do a self-reflection that goes beyond the superficial, to find something deep outside of yourself to live your life for, if that makes any sense. And that's why you get trapped in her world, because it's a world where you stay in a level of self-reflection that's very shallow, and you never find a deeper truth to invest your emotions in and channel them outwards to the outside world. And that's why you get trapped in her labyrinth. And then later we write here, the self-reflection, let me see if I can find this. The self-reflection forged by the stages, and we talk about the red, white, black, and green stages. So that's what the stages we're referring to here. The self-reflection forged by the stages is not narcissistic in nature. Instead, it's self-critical. It is willing to judge the self and to raise fundamental questions about the nature and purpose of one's existence. It's willing to confront the apparent emptiness and purposelessness of the human experience, an emptiness that is so disconcerting that most in the world prefer to sweep it under the carpet. As one engages in this introspective battle, one discovers a truth far greater than ourselves, a truth worth sacrificing one's life for. That's when we make what Kierkegaard calls the, quote, leap of faith, a leap that defies superficial logic because it operates by a much more complex logic than the one most people understand. This, quote, leap of faith correlates with the, quote, quantum leap of light that we have shared on before. In the physical world, time changes as we approach the speed of light. The time dimension that seems absolute and universal under Newtonian physics becomes relative and individual in the physics discovered by Einstein. My watch and your watch may seem to be moving in perfect synchronicity, but they are actually running independently, and the difference becomes more notorious as one of us begins to move near the speed of light. That is, when 1 minute my watch becomes 2 minutes in your watch. Such a statement sounds as utter nonsense if all you're acquainted with is Newtonian physics, but it makes perfect sense if you're acquainted with the theory of relativity, for you then become aware of complex laws that are hidden from the eyes of banal everyday existence. Kierkegaard believed that the world was composed of an endless variety of, quote, subjective alternate realities, unquote, which correlates with the physical fact that we all have our own internal clock, whose hands move in accordance with their own particular movements in space. Presented with this endless variety of, quote, subjective alternate realities, unquote, Kierkegaard believed that we must jump and proclaim our own choice. That's when God's objective truth becomes our own subjective reality. So that's what we wrote there. It's the objective truth becomes our own subjective reality. So it's not like as we're finding ourselves, we enter into our own time zone. But as we enter into our own time zone, the objective truth becomes our subjective reality. It's like it's no longer something outside of me, it's now inside of me, and it's as if it was mine from the beginning, even though it's subjective. It's outside of you, But as you self-reflect, as you go into that, then suddenly that truth that's external to you becomes your thing. It is something you live and breathe and are willing to die for because it's yours. You have embraced it, and it's become your subjective reality. And I know this sounds like mumbo jumbo, but there is something there. And it's yours. It doesn't matter if anyone else doesn't embrace it or understand it. See, that's the thing, when you can be one against a million people, because it no longer matters if you don't do a head count of how many people embrace this truth or not to accept it, because that has become your subjective reality. You know it's true, and it doesn't matter who else believes it or doesn't believe it. And then you're willing to sacrifice and live your life and die for it, even if no one else embraces it. And people who live in the soap opera world of Taylor Swift and the Hispanic telenovela, they never do that because they're always worried about, they're doing head counts, how many people support something, and then they will go for it and so forth, because they don't do enough self-reflection. And the only time that they are thinking about themselves is in terms of pleasing themselves and pursuing their own objectives. Just like when Taylor Swift and the boyfriend cordon off their house to keep the trick or treating Halloween kids out because they didn't want to be disturbed. So it's that same thing, that self-absorption. And one last thing before we start talking about songs, if we have time for that, is just one thing that seems unrelated, but I know it's related. I was doing something online, and an advert came up, and the advert was about an advert for a church app, like a Christian app, and the app was, the advert showed this the app and it had like a list of emotions. Sadness, loneliness, or depression—I forget—but some list of emotions. So, you would tick on these check boxes, depending on the emotions you had, and then you press enter, press a button or something, and it would send you to the Christian to the Bible verses that address that emotion. So that you wouldn't feel lonely, or you wouldn't feel sad or depressed or things like that. And when I saw that, I felt so much sadness in my heart, because that's the state of the American church, or and the matriarchal church in general. That's how they think. These Christians are always trying to, they turn their Christianity to this kind of therapy. Emotional therapy for their souls, that they want to feel good, come to church and feel good, and it's all about how you feel and finding some sort of comfort, and that's all server mentality, because that's what the server does. The server feels your pain and tries to soothe your pain. The server tries to keep you away from suffering. So anything that makes you suffer is banished, and they try to soothe it with some sort of balm. I'd call it Gilead's balm, coming to soothe the pain and the discomfort. Instead of allowing the pain to continue so that you hit rock bottom and find the reality that, my life sucks. There's something wrong with my life. But no, and every time I feel that my life is going nowhere, you know, just like the Taylor Swift song. When I feel that, I just, you know, click on this checkbox, tick this checkbox, click on this button, and I'll find a verse in the Bible that will make my discomfort go away, my emotional discomfort. Then I'll feel everything is fine. No, but everything is not okay. It's not okay. You have to realize there's something rotten in Denmark. And it's interesting that what we were reading just now was from a posting called Denmark Part 2. So I know that's not a coincidence, but yeah, there's something rotten in Denmark. There's something not right. And you have to deal with it. As conservatives would realize the country's falling apart. There's something wrong with the country. And they would feel the pain, but they never went into the self-reflection. And kind of say, you know, pardon my French, but what the hell is going on? What is going on? And then they would have realized, hey, we built this country on a foundation that was fundamentally flawed, and we need to correct it, and we need to change the foundations, and we need to stop glorifying the founding fathers and the Constitution and all these principles, the concept of federalism, state sovereignty, and all this is rubbish that we built the nation on, that we thrived despite these things, not because of them. But we never wanted to go there because it hurt too much. It hurt too much. So we would just, conservatives would just put up their, you know, on their honky tonk station and listen to some patriotic country song. And yeah, Kid Rock and some other patriotic singer, and we'll all feel good. America's great. Let's keep on trucking. Let's go Madison, Jefferson, and all these other heroes of the past. They're going to lead the way to our future. And we never really said, okay, there's something we need to fix. Because you have to face the pain. See, okay, what is the emptiness? Why is there emptiness here? Because that's the only time you get to the root issues and see there, oh, okay, there's something wrong here. We have to fix it. So this church app is this thing where you just keep masking the symptom with some cheesy Bible verse. And I'm not saying that the Bible verse is cheesy. I'm saying the application of it is what is cheesy. It turns cheesy. If you take these things and just use them in this banal way, that you turn them cheesy. It's not that they're cheesy in and of themselves, if you catch what I'm saying. But you dishonor what you're reading when you give it an application that was not intended for it. And it's all this, and that's why America died. That's why American music is now going nowhere. So now let's start going through some of the songs that we wanted to talk about, some other songs. We had started before with, you know, going through some songs, and we would play the song for 30 seconds and then talk a little bit about it and move on to the next song. So we wanted to continue doing that. So this song that I wanted to mention, and as you may recall, this list of songs, and I may be skipping a few along the way, but this list of songs came as I was just hit the shuffle button on my phone and just started playing, you know, the songs that came randomly, and I started recording the names of the songs, and I know it's not a coincidence the songs that came up. I know it all had a purpose. So the song that, one of the songs that came up next in that shuffled list is a song that you're going to hear in a moment if I can get to it. Okay, here it goes. I'll try to play
30 seconds of it, and I hope you can hear it. Let me try to put the volume in such a way that you can hear it. All right, here it goes. Okay, as you may have heard, that that's Creedence Clearwater Revival, and the name of the song is Have You Ever Seen the Rain? And this song is very meaningful to me for many reasons. When I was a kid, long time ago, that was a long time ago, and interesting, as I just said, that's kind of that's what the song says at the beginning of American Pie, long time ago. So a long time ago, when I was a little kid, my father had a Chinese food restaurant because he was of Chinese descent, and it's so long ago that the restaurant had a jukebox in it, and people would play music, you know, on the jukebox. And my father would tell me that when I was a kid, I would, it must have been between 2 and 4, that I would sing along with certain songs on the jukebox. And I think this was one of the songs, but I wasn't too aware of it until one day, many years later, I was I got off of work, and a group of us, someone had a car, and I think we decided to go somewhere. I don't know, or we were. I think he was giving us a lift. So 4 or 5 of us got in the car, and the guy turned on his car's radio, and the songs were playing. And then I even remember the exact place where the car was going when this song came on the radio, and it touched me at such a deep level. As if, I don't know how to explain it, as if that song had been a part of me my whole life. And then I realized, oh, I think that's the song my father was saying that I sang to when I was a kid. It was such a visceral thing, because I had not listened to that song for a while. And it was that day, as I was inside that car, that I realized, oh, and that's why there was such a deep impact when I heard it coming out of the car radio, as if it just took me back to when I was a little kid. So that just shows you the song transported me. I wasn't stuck inside that song, you know, like a Taylor Swift Labyrinth. I was being transported, and not transported to a nostalgic past like sorrow and all that, because it was like being transported to a place in the past that made me long for something in the future. If that makes any sense, it took me back to a place that sent me forward. And I wanted to share with you the lyrics just to give you an idea of what the song is about. Let me see if I can pull it up here, the lyrics of the song. have you seen? Apologize. Have you? I have to look it up again. Have you ever seen the rain? Okay. I'm on a website called genius.com doing the searches here. So it says this song was released as a single in 1971 from the album Pendulum 1970 by roots rock group Creedence Clearwater Revival. Okay. So it came out in December of 1970. That was the year the Orioles won their second World Series. Brazil had just become world champions for the third time in football. So, okay, the song says, someone told me long ago, there's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time. When it's over, so they say, it will rain a sunny day. I know, shining down like water. And then it says, I want to know, have you ever seen the rain? I want to know, have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? Yesterday and days before, sun is cold and rain is hard. I know, been that way for all my time. Till forever on it goes, through the circle fast and slow. I know, it can't stop, I wonder. I want to know, have you ever seen the rain? I want to know, have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? So, you see the poetry in the lyrics, and Taylor Swift is hailed as this great songwriter, but I could be wrong, but I don't think she's ever written anything as simple and beautiful as this, because it's not complicated, it's not convoluted, and there's nothing wrong with complex things. I'm just saying it's so beautiful it doesn't even need to be adorned with a lot of stuff. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful poetry. And the thing is, and that's something you will not see in American music again. It's gone. Because America is dead. It's so sad to say that. But we will never see music like this ever produced in America again. And Creedence is an American band. But it's over. When it says, someone told me long ago, there's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time. Someone who is perceiving the atmosphere. Someone who's living, going outside of himself to perceive something. So it says, there's a calm before the storm. I know there's a calm before a storm because it's been coming. The storm has been coming for some time. I can feel it coming. And then it says, when it's over, so they say, it will rain a sunny day. I know, shining down like water. And then he says, like, the contrast. I want to know, have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? And that can be taken in so many ways, because on the one hand, it can tell you that things are bad when they seem good. Because it's like you're feeling the rain, you know, it's like a rainy day, even though the sun is outside. It's like everything looks normal, but there's something going on that's not right. But you can also take it a different way. You can say, even though the rain might feel like, oh, it's a dreary day, but in the midst of that dreary day, there is a rain of life coming upon the earth. And you see the sun coming out on a rainy day, like something that would normally make you feel, depressed or sad. And instead of being sad because it's a rainy day, you rejoice because the sun is coming out. It's like a rain that brings sunshine. And that's what was going to come to America, a rain that brought sunshine, a manifestation, a revival like this country had never seen and the world had never seen before. It was going to be incredible. It was going to be incredible because I saw it. I know what was coming. And America just didn't care because it never bothered to feel the storm that was coming. It never bothered to see there's something wrong in the air. So that's what we wanted to share about this song. And it's interesting. It says, "Sun is cold and rain is hard. I know, been that way for all my time. It's the person who feels the emptiness. Yeah, the sun is shining, but it's not warming me up. You know, things look good on the outside, but it's doing me no good because I know there's something not right. The rain is hard." And then it says, "I know, been that way for all my life. It's all my time. Someone who's self-reflecting and feeling the emptiness of everything. Till forever on it goes through the circle, fast and slow. I know it can't stop. I wonder through that circle, fast and slow, like forever. Like we are trapped in this cycle that things that never change, and you have to be aware of that emptiness of that cycle of purposelessness." This that we are in, where things just go nowhere, just like a Taylor Swift song, just goes nowhere. Even though things look good on the surface, we are trapped in the same cycle of the same problems, the same thing, and it keeps spiraling and getting worse and worse with time. So this is what this song is about. It's a song that has a longing in it. It has a deep longing in it. So, and even though it seems like there's despair, there's also this kind of twist on the song that, yes, it's sunny outside but rainy on the inside because there's something not right. But it also is like a foretelling a future where rain will come and the sun will shine through the rain because it's a rain of blessing, a rain of life, instead of a rain of doom and gloom. To me, it projects me to to what I was seeing about America. And it's not a coincidence, I think, that the name of the band is Creedence Clearwater Revival. Revival with a clear water. It's the water coming down, the clear water coming down with the sun behind it. And it, as you know, when the sun and water and rain combine, you get rainbows. And that's what was going to come to this country. A beautiful revival, but it's gone. The other song that we wanted to mention, or kind of play briefly, is this one. I'm skipping through some of the songs in the shuffle, and I'm wondering if I should, but I think I will skip them for now. One of the next songs that came up was this one, if I can get to play it here. Okay, here we go. All right, I'll try to play 30 seconds of it, and I hope you can hear it. Okay, I hope you heard that. Let me try to pull up the lyrics for that song. It says, as you know, the name of the song is King of Pain by The Police, the British-American group. I'd say mostly British, but it's, I believe, I think it's three fellows, two British fellows, and I think they're English, and one American fellow, he was the drummer. The song says, "There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in a high treetop. There's a flagpole rag, and the wind won't stop." And then it says, "I've stood here before inside the pouring rain. Again, rain, interesting. With the world turning circles running round my brain, I guess I'm always hoping that you will end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. And then it says, there's a little black spot on the sun today. And then in the background, if you hear the song, in that part, in the background, you hear the voices in the back saying, that's my soul up there. So the lead singer sings a line, and in the background, I guess the other two members of police sing, that's my soul up there. So he says, there's a little black spot on the sun today. That's my soul up there. It's the same old thing as yesterday. That's my soul up there. There's a black hat caught in the high tree top. That's my soul up there. There's a flagpole rag and the wind won't stop. That's my soul up there. And then it repeats, I have stood here before inside the pouring rain with the world turning circles running round my brain. I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. And then it says, there's a fossil that's trapped in a high cliff wall. That's my soul up there. There's a dead salmon frozen in a waterfall. That's my soul up there. There's a blue whale beached by spring tide's ebb. That's my soul up there. There's a butterfly trapped in a spider's web. That's my soul up there. I've stood here before inside the pouring rain with the world turning circles running round my brain. I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. And then it says, there's a king on a throne with his eyes torn out. There's a blind man looking for a shadow of doubt. There's a rich man sleeping on a golden bed. There's a skeleton choking on a crust of bread. And then it says, there's a red fox torn by a huntman's pack. That's my soul up there. There's a black-winged gull with a broken back. That's my soul up there. There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. And then it repeats, I've stood here before inside the pouring rain with the world turning circles running round my brain. I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. And again, beautiful poetry. And I, you know, Taylor Swift is literally the first billionaire who's made $1 billion on music sales and concerts alone. The first person in history to do that. And I don't envy that, good for her, I guess. She has an incredible work ethic, has a lot of talent at a certain level that she has not developed. The talent is there. She just has not developed it. It's all at a very superficial level. And she's been nominated to a gazillion Grammys and Billboard awards and all that at levels never achieved by any other artist in history. And she's hailed for her songwriting prowess. She's almost like a poet, you know, some people say. But again, I wonder if there's one song out of her huge repertoire, $1 billion repertoire, that matches the poetry of this one song. I don't think so. Not that she's not talented. It's just that she has decided to stay at a certain level because her self-reflection doesn't let her go any deeper. Because it's a self-reflection at the server level, at the matriarchal level, the server and organizer level, and not the visionary level. This is visionary level self-reflection because it's willing to accept pain and let the pain flow. It hurts, but it's not a masochistic thing. It's just an awareness of a reality. You become aware of the reality and it hurts. It hurts very deeply. You don't try to soothe it. You don't try to pretend it's not there. You accept it and let it flow, and you flow in that pain. It hurts. You see what's going on. You see the reality and it hurts. You feel the emptiness around you and inside of you. And instead of pretending like it's not there, you let it flow like a river. So it's interesting here when he says, it says, there's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. It's the same, like he's aware of something that's not right. And it's been happening for a while. The same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in a high tree top. There's a flagpole rag and the wind won't stop. So there's stagnation. That's what he's saying, stagnation and decay. The black hat caught in a high tree top. The black hat should be on some person's head, not on a high tree top, being unused. It's like talking about things that the potential of things and gifts and talents of people that remain unused because there's something wrong with the environment. That's why I complain so much about, all these races that are doing all these wrong things, because I know the potential in each of them. I know the gifts that each of them have, and it is an angering and annoying and frustrating to see all that gift being thrown away because there's a system that perpetuates the wasting away of these gifts. It's a matriarchal system. So there's a black hat caught in a high tree top, their flagpole rag, and the wind won't stop. So there's this rag, instead of a flag, it's a rag. So it's decay. It's a country in decay. I mean, you can take it in many ways, but that's what it's a nation, a culture, a value system that's in decay. And the wind won't stop. It just keeps flapping away as if it were a normal flag. But it's not a flag. It's just a dirty old rag. That's what America became. You know, the conservatives hailing the greatness of America. And America was, the American flag just became this big old rag. It's all it was, a decayed old rag. And it was still flopping in the air. And the wind won't stop, as if to say, look at my flag. Look at how great my flag is. And the flag is all decayed. And then it says, I've stood here before inside the pouring rain, with the world turning circles running around my brain. So notice, this guy is also trapped. You could say, oh, that's like a Taylor Swift labyrinth. He's trapped inside his head. But no, he's not trapped Taylor Swift style. But he's in self-reflection. And the world's turning circles running around my brain. And then it says, I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain. So he says there's someone out there who can end this, who, if they cooperate, they can help end this. But it's my destiny to be the king of pain. In other words, I because other people don't want to follow the vision or embrace the reality that I'm seeing, I am forced to continue suffering with the awareness of what's going on. And then, you know, it starts saying a whole bunch of things like there's a black spot on the sun today. There's a black hat caught on a high tree top. And then repeating, that's my soul up there. That's my soul up there. So interesting, he's doing self-reflection, but he's seeing his soul up there outside of himself. It's like, so again, it's not a song that catches you and traps you inside of it. So the emptiness of the world becomes his emptiness. That's what he's saying. That's my soul up there. It's like the world will not, my soul will not be okay until the world is okay. If you catch what I'm saying. And when it says there's a fossil trapped in a high cliff wall, it's, you know, people who are stuck and trapped in a paradigm. Fossils who are living in the past, like conservatives, trapped in a high cliff wall. There's a dead salmon frozen in a waterfall. A salmon is the one who goes against the current, against the popular trends, but it was defeated on its way, against the current, frozen in a waterfall by a system that is anti-salmon. And then there's a blue whale beached by spring tide's ebb. It's talking about the blue whale represents a lot of things. And if you go to the website where these recordings are posted, you'll see a lot of things we say about whales, like the London whale that showed up in 2006 and so forth. And springtime is a time of joy, of renewal, of new life, of revival. You could say the earth comes into revival in the spring. And this blue whale that represents something great, you know, being trapped in spring when it should be in a time of revival, it's dying. That's kind of what it represents. And then there's a butterfly trapped in a spider's web. And to me, the matriarchal system, I guess one of the best ways to describe it is like a spider's web, the spider that traps souls in it and just does not let them go. So there's this beautiful butterfly that has metamorphosized, if that verb exists, from a worm into a beautiful insect that's flying about with, you know, beautiful colored wings. And instead of living life and being allowed to flow freely and fulfill its destiny, it gets trapped in the matriarchal spider's web. So all of these things are being reflected here in this song. And yes, technically this song was written, according to what I read. Let me see if I can find it here, if I did pull it up. Yes, I think I... let me see if I can find the link where... Yes, I'm going to go to a website called oldtimemusic.com, where apparently they comment on songs and things like that. So it says, "The meaning behind the song King of Pain by the Police." And it says, released in 1983, King of Pain is a single from the Police's fifth studio album, Synchronicity. And interesting, we had just mentioned Synchronicity a moment ago, at some point. Written by lead vocalist Sting, the song portrays a troubled individual who realizes that his life is a series of painful experiences with no end in sight. Sting's starkly vivid lyrics showcase a deep sense of melancholy and resignation to a life of suffering. As he sings, "I've stood here before inside the pouring rain." Okay, and we've read that before. The song's melancholic tone is beautifully complemented by the eerie melody it is set to, with Sting's vocals soaring above a haunting synth arrangement and the band's trademark propulsive drumming. At its core, King of Pain seems to be a straightforward, literal portrayal of an individual's struggles with pain and trauma. However, as we move beyond the surface, we begin to understand the song's subtleties and complexities. So, you know, it's interesting. The person who wrote this this article is talking about going beyond the surface. The thing we've been saying over and over again, that Taylor Swift never goes beyond the surface or below the surface. So he's saying, when we move beyond the surface, we begin to understand the song's subtleties and complexities. Rather than depicting suffering as something to be cured or escaped from, the song embraces pain as an inherent part of life, something that cannot be eliminated but only understood and accepted. And it's kind of what we were saying just a moment ago. It's not a coincidence this person is tapping into it. Maybe not phrasing it exactly right, I would humbly dare to say. But the person is tapping into it. It's that... See, the server personality has escapist mentality. And that's, you know, the rapture concept in the American Christian church, conservative church, it's a very server personality concept. It's like, I can't embrace the idea of you feeling any sort of pain. So I'm going to soothe you. The server is a nurse, a protector, a motherly protector. And so the server personality says, "I can't have you feel pain." That's why they're anti-judgment. They don't want to hear someone say, "Black people have this problem with cannabis," or "Black people have this problem with single parent families," or "Black people have this problem with black on black crime. They kill each other all the time." No, that hurts their feelings. So it always comes to protect. and the rapture thing, the theme in the matriarchal Christian church in America, that's the same thing. Oh, I can't have you think that you're going to go through a tribulation and sorrow. No, there's going to be the spacecraft that's going to come and just beam all of you up into heaven and protect, and you'll be happy as the world goes to hell. And then once everything has finished, then all y'all come back down, and this God is going to fix everything for you, and everything's going to be okay. See, that's escapism. And I'm not saying, oh, enjoy the pain. It's not masochism. Who wants to feel pain for the sake of feeling pain? But it's this awareness that there's something wrong. You have to accept the pain and embrace it. And then, not embrace it. I don't know. That's what I don't like about what they wrote here. It's not embracing the pain. It's accepting the pain and letting it flow, because it's a reflection of a reality. You're not. See, if you're in pain and sorrow when everything really is okay, then there's something wrong with you. It's not just pain for the sake of pain. It's pain that reflects a reality that's outside and realizes, oh, I have to pay a price to end this emptiness. The emptiness that's inside of me, that's a reflection of the emptiness that's outside of me in the world. There's something not right with things right now. And I embrace the need to have to suffer. And because as I recognize it, I feel the pain. And instead of pretending the pain is not there, try to silence the pain, with some sort of anesthetic, what I do is I accept the pain and I flow with it, and I, because it's a reflection of the reality, I can't deny the reality. So it says here, the lyrics can be interpreted as a commentary on the darkness of the human condition, with Sting's character acknowledging that pain is a part of their destiny, something that they are fated to endure. The song highlights the impact of traumatic experiences and emphasizes the importance of acknowledging and processing pain rather than seeking to deny or mask it. It suggests that recognizing pain as a part of one's existence is a path towards healing and transcendence. And it's interesting they use the word transcendence, to go beyond to a new dimension. And that's the only way you can enter a new dimension, when you feel the pain of the current one and the emptiness of the current one. And then you have to let the emotions flow and channel them and let them just flow through you to send you to where you and the world need to be. So again, it's the opposite of a Taylor Swift song that traps you and you go in circles and go nowhere. What I was going to say, and I thought it was going to be mentioned here, is that I read somewhere that he wrote this song shortly after the breakup. He had a divorce, Sting. He divorced, I think, his first wife, and he was feeling the pain. So he was feeling the emptiness. And that was what inspired him to write the song. But the song is more than just... See, you read the lyrics and you don't... You have no idea this is coming from a guy who feels pain after a divorce. He's not mentioning, like, oh, my girlfriend left me or my wife left me and I'm all alone and boo-hoo-hoo. It's not a soap opera kind of lyrics, if you catch what I'm saying. You would have no clue that this song was born out of a moment of post-divorce emptiness. Because the lyrics transcend that. It goes beyond just, yes, it happened in the context of a divorce, but it goes beyond the divorce, if you catch what I'm saying. And also, the lyrics are beautiful, and the song itself, when you listen to the beginning of it, you hear it once, you never forget it. I remember when I was a kid, I heard that song once, and it's like, my goodness, this is special, and I never forgot the song. And I get goosebumps when I think about the song. Just the lyrics, I'm sorry, just the melody of it at the beginning, this haunting sound at the beginning of it. And the same thing with the other songs that we have played, like the Creedence song. The beautiful, you take away the lyrics, just the melody. If you play an instrumental version of it, you feel the beauty of it. The song, the melody speaks to you. You don't get that from a Taylor Swift song. And I'm not harping on Taylor Swift per se. I'm harping on what America has become, and its music is now there. I listen to music now when I have the unfortunate chance to do so, when I'm buying something outside and they have music playing and I'm forced to listen to it. So I've been exposed to current music, and it there is no depth to it. There's no quality to it. It's just a lot of technical stuff and sounds and beats, but there's nothing there. There's no uniqueness. The lyrics don't say anything, and the melody and the harmony says nothing. It doesn't say anything. It goes nowhere. It takes you nowhere. We wanted to get to a certain song, but we might not get to it today. We'd like to share this song. So I'm going to find it first and play it for you here. Okay, here it goes. Okay, I hope you heard that. That song is "It's a Heartache" by Bonnie Tyler, a Welsh singer. And just before talking about that song, because this song and King of Pain are kind of related in a certain way, not just because they came one after the other in that shuffled list that I played that produced this list of songs, but there's like a... they are kind of two sides of the same coin. But the thing is that when I hear King of Pain, it makes me think of, you know, the pain that I'm going through. You're making me the King of Pain because you needed to change something in you to end my pain. And that's how I feel about America. You needed to change something about you and your attitudes and your thoughts. And if you had done that, you would have ended my emptiness and my pain. But instead, you chose to remain stuck in that mindset, and now you've made me the King of Pain. Because I'm like stuck in a permanent situation of feeling the pain of your death and your emptiness and your unwillingness to change. And now the world remains stuck in this empty situation it's in because you chose to kill yourself. Kill yourself with your own stupidity. So it's that awareness, and that's what the visionary mentality becomes aware of, that you are bound by the will of others, that it's not just you forging ahead and, you know, hip hip hooray and cheerleading yourself to victory, because it depends on others embracing the vision and following through on it. It's not just you. So you become bound by others, and that's very painful because you just can't live in your own island and be happy with yourself, which is what Travis and Taylor Swift were doing on Halloween. You know, I don't care about the world. I just want to be happy myself. Taylor saying, I found my Prince Charming and now I'm not going to I'm going to have someone protecting me from all the people who envy me, and so forth. It's that very self-enclosed mindset. But the visionary says, no, the hell with that. You can't live like that. And I'm willing to expose myself to pain and having my happiness being determined by the actions of others. And that's a very painful thing to do. It's a very painful situation to be in, where your happiness depends on what others do. So now let me find the lyrics of that song. For some reason, I'm having lots of trouble today moving here along these sites. It's a heartache. So I'm reading the lyrics from this genius.com website where you can find lyrics and so forth. This song appears on the 1978 Bonnie Tyler album of the same name. The album was released in the UK as Natural Force. So it's a very simple, not that simple, but kind of straightforward song. It says, it's a heartache, nothing but a heartache. Hits you when it's too late, hits you when you're down. It's a fool's game. Nothing but a fool's game. Standing in the cold rain. So again, the rain shows up here. Feeling like a clown. It's a heartache. Nothing but a heartache. Love him till your arms break. Then he lets you down. It ain't right with love to share when you find he doesn't care for you. It ain't wise to need someone as much as I depended on you. It's a heartache. Nothing but a heartache. Hits you when it's too late. Hits you when you're down. It's a fool's game, nothing but a fool's game. Standing in the cold rain, feeling like a clown. It ain't right with love to share when you find he doesn't care for you. It ain't wise to need someone as much as I depended on you. And this goes to what we were saying a moment ago. When you embrace a vision and live for a vision, you subject yourself to the actions of others, and your happiness or sorrow, it's dependent on what others choose to do. And you feel like a fool because when they don't follow through, you feel like a fool. You feel like a clown, like the song, like she says. And you know, it's like I kept propping up America, personally speaking, you know, to the world and to everyone that could. It was within earshot, saying America is this, America is that, America is the other. Only now to see that America is just like all the others, like Latin America. Maybe at a higher level of futility, or a higher level of mediocrity, but still mediocre. And after having said all these wonderful things about America, America turns around and proves me a fool. And that's how it feels. But I don't regret having done it because I know that what I was doing, like not just me, but all of us who were doing this, we were saying, this is what you can be. This is what you can be. This is what you can be. And I'm willing to pay the price that you can be this. Are you willing to just embrace it? Where a few of us are paying most of the price already. We've paid for the food. We've paid for everything. It's just there. It's just for you to take it. All you have to do is just give up certain things. Just let go of certain things. And it won't hurt you to give up those things as much as it's hurt us to go through the hell we've gone through so that we can get you to this point. And America said, no, we're not, no. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to recognize that I need something that I don't think I need. I can't do that. And that's what happened. So the beauty of the song, the melody, it's all beautiful, and the power of her singing, the raspy, throaty sound of Bonnie Tyler. It's heart-wrenching when she says it's a heartache, when she says it with her raspy voice. because it feels like it's coming from the depths of her soul. You can't, I've never heard Taylor Swift sing like that, or sing in such a way that it comes from the depth of her soul. It's just this reflection at the soul, at this very superficial level. Because she is from the matriarchal world. She has embraced the matriarchal mindset, the server and organizer personality, and in that world, pain is bad. And pain is only, the only way to deal with pain is relationships. Just have more friends, more people to interact with, and that's how you silence the emptiness and the darkness. And that's how you avoid having to pay the price to fulfill a vision you don't want to be aware of. So that's that song. And I think we do have time for this one last one. And I guess we'll get to the edge of the place where we wanted to go. There's a song we wanted to get to, but so let me find this song, sorry, and play it very quickly. Okay, here it goes. Oh, sorry. that was Bonnie Tyler again. Here is the song. Okay, I played a little over 30 seconds. I hope the Bee Gees don't mind. That was The Edge of the Universe by the Bee Gees. Let me see if I can find the lyrics of that song very quickly. Okay. It says, "Just my dog and I, at the edge of the universe. Well, I didn't want to bring her, and I know it will make her worse. Now I look out on forever, and it must be nice down there, and they call me Shenandoah in the air. Well, I'm 10 feet tall, but I'm only 3 feet wide, and I live inside an ocean that flows on the other side. If I came back down tomorrow, would it all be far too soon? And it looks like it's going to be a lovely afternoon. I thought that I was going home, and all the way I kept on praying. I couldn't stop to turn around. Well, here I am, and here I'm staying. It's been my longest journey, and I've come through the black of night. I was tired and hungry when I saw your distant light. Well, I know this may sound crazy, but I'm sure I got here first. I'm just me, Shenandoah, at the edge of the universe. I thought that I was going home, and all the way I kept on praying, I couldn't stop to turn around. Well, here I am, and here I'm staying. Just my dog and I at the edge of the universe. Well, I didn't want to bring her, and I know it will make her worse. Now I look out on forever, and it must be nice down there, and they call me Shenandoah in the air, at the edge of the universe." And the melody is very beautiful. Every time I hear the song, there's something that stirred like a river inside of me, of this desire for something, to see the manifestation of something fulfilled. And when the song says "just my dog and I," you say, "Well, what's he talking about?" I don't know if he realizes it when he's singing this. I'm not sure which of the brothers was singing here. I think it's not Barry and it's not Maurice. It's Robin. It must be Robin Gibb, I imagine. But whoever's singing this, I don't know if he realizes what he's saying, but the dog, what does the dog represent? A dog is the server personality personified. the server, you know, a dog is, you know, likes to serve, likes to please. That's what the dog represents. A dog has very strong emotions. You know, it can feel pain and sorrow. You know, it's very expressive. So when he says just my dog and I, it's like my emotions on the line. He says, I didn't want to bring her. In other words, I didn't want to bring her on this journey because I know it will make her worse. So it's like exposing his emotions to pain, pain that a dog would normally want to avoid. A server, think of the dog as the server. The server would not want to experience this pain, but I'll bring him along anyway, because I'm going to serve a vision. And I'm going to, but I'm not going to shy away from the pain the way the server would normally do. And it says, now I look out on forever, and it must be nice down there. So it's like looking into the future, into eternity, and saying that must be beautiful, and aiming for it. Then it said, well, I'm 10 feet tall, but I'm only 3 feet wide. I'm not sure what that means, but and I live inside an ocean that flows on the other side. I'm not too clear what that means. Someone who is living, there's self-reflection there. I live inside an ocean that flows. So it's like living in the ocean that flows is his emotions that are flowing constantly, flowing towards a vision. And so there's self-reflection there, and he sees the tidal waves of his emotions flowing towards a vision, and he's aware of it. That's why he's saying, I live inside an ocean. I'm aware that I'm living inside an ocean that flows on the other side. And I guess on the other side means that it's talking about something that is happening outside the natural realm. So it's more than just daily routine emotions. That's what the server kind of focuses on, the daily routine emotions, the telenovela emotions. It's like these are emotions that are operating at another level. And then it says, I thought I was going home, and all the way I kept on praying. I couldn't stop to turn around. Well, here I am, and here I'm staying. In other words, I'm staying on this journey. I can't turn around. I'm committed to this vision. And then it says, I know this may sound crazy, but I'm sure I got here first. I'm just me, Shenandoah. I have no idea who Shenandoah is. And then at the edge of the universe. So it's someone who is on a journey towards something. Let me see if I can find something here. So I'm again going to oldtimemusic.com, where they talk about the meaning of this song. This song was released in 1977 as part of their album Main Course. The song exhibits a profound and thought-provoking meaning that resonates with listeners even decades later. This melodious composition delves into existential themes, inviting contemplation on the human experience. Again, notice, self-reflection. The lyrics metaphorically depict the idea of reaching the edge of the universe as a metaphor for pushing oneself to the limits and exploring uncharted territories in life. It invites listeners to reflect upon their own lives. Again, literally, he's saying it, self-reflection. Encouraging them to break free from the constraints of their comfort zones and embrace the unknown. The song is a testament to the band's artistic prowess, as it skillfully combines deep lyrical content with a catchy melody that keeps listeners engaged. So again, it's not just the lyrics, it's the music. You hear that melody, you don't forget it. And there's a beauty to it. You flow with it like a river. And you feel like you're flowing towards something. You're not trapped in a labyrinth. You're flowing towards something, and it takes you up, but it takes you down, and it's like a drama. and with a purpose. So that's what we wanted to say. It says here, the Bee Gees drew inspiration from their personal journeys as well as the pursuit of knowledge and self-discovery. The band members were known for their introspective nature, and Edge of the Universe showcases their desire to push the boundaries of their artistic creativity. And again, the contrast with the Taylor style music is very obvious. And I guess we're going to leave it there. And we'll hopefully continue with another song later, and then get to the one song that I wanted to get to in this recording. But we kind of got to the edge of the universe and didn't get across it to get to that song. But we'll do so hopefully in the next recording. Thank you very much for listening.